Hi, I'm Aisha, and I'm a former host of Mocha Single Mothers by Choice, or SMCs. Like you, as an SMC, I decided to become a mother knowing I'd be the sole care provider and parent of my children, at least at the outset. The Mocha stood for Black, so I'm using the word Black, and I'll be discussing being a single mother by choice from a Black woman's lens. You'll connect with all the interesting and fun things about this non-traditional path, like discussing which sperm to use and some hard truths about fertility and the realities of dating as a single mother who doesn't have a co-parent to rely on occasionally,
and what it's actually like to parent as an SMC.
This is the Black Single Mothers by Choice podcast.
Hi, Aisha. Thank you so much for having me on here. I definitely listen to your podcast. I'm not a single mom by choice, but I find a lot of overlap in our experiences. I'm one of the clinic relation managers at Seattle Sperm Bank, and I started at the beginning of the pandemic, which was a wonderful time to start a new job. And yes, I am also a Black mother. My daughter's now six. And I have my master's in reproductive clinical science from Eastern Virginia Medical School. And I'm just really passionate about all things fertility.
Yay!
Nice.
Awesome. All right.
So Elise, when we first met, I think one of the first things Tara and I did was we shared our story and you shared your story with us. And we thought that it was a real powerful story and one that needed to be told. A few weeks ago, we did an episode about medical advocacy as it relates to Black women. And we were reminded of your story and we were hoping that you could share a little bit of your story going through your pregnancy and childbirth with your daughter. If you could share that story with our audience, because I think it's powerful.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember listening to that episode. I got really lucky with a doctor who was my advocate. He saved both me and my daughter's life. At 35 weeks, he found out that I was in kidney failure and sent me to the hospital right away. And I still wanted to deliver vaginally. I still have that in my head. So he let me labor knowing that he was going to be out of town. So it was up to the rest of the medical team to talk with me and my now husband about just communicate with us with everything that's going on. So I labored for a couple of days. Nothing worked. They were giving me all the Pitocin and all the drugs and nothing was working. So we said, hey, we need a C-section. It's not working. And first of all, nobody wanted to really talk to me about that or why. And in the end just said, no, here I am laboring and they're telling me no, that they can't do anything. So meanwhile, my doctor gets back after 5 days of being in active labor and he walks in and he's like, I'm so sorry, you're pregnant right now. I find out later that the rest of the staff was really scared to operate on me because I was so sick. So they didn't communicate any of that with me. They just said no. But he gets back and by now it's an emergency. So he rushes me into a C-section. They didn't have even time for an epidural. My husband started gowning up and they kicked him out of the room and they put me to sleep and just pulled her out as fast as possible. So I woke up in the ICU. She was sent to the NICU. Mm-hmm. And I essentially didn't even get to meet her for a day and a half. And after I was out, the doctor came and he sat by my side and stayed with me. And I felt really, we're stable, we're here, she's here. But all of the rest of the staff just, we were unmarried and we look young. And we just started getting the comments, the, oh, are you sure you can handle this? And the, or this is going to be expensive. And so I'm visiting the NICU while healing from this C-section. I'm walking across the hospital because normally when you're recovering, you're in that post-recovery, you're right next to your child. Mm-hmm. But I was traveling from a whole nother unit. I wasn't in regular recovery. And I was walking with this C-section to go see her. And the NICU would send the lactation consultant. Mm-hmm. And it was weird because I wasn't having any issues breastfeeding. She would just pop up and then she would be confused. Mm-hmm. And I would be confused. And we found out it was the nurses who kept calling her in. So then I started showing up to breastfeed my daughter and they had already bottle fed her without, it was these little weird things that just started adding up. It was mm-hmm. one after another. And then it said, then we were like, what's our pathway home? How do we get her home? Right. And they said, do you have a car seat? And I'm just like, do you ask?
No, we just were going to strap her to the top of the car.
At this point in time, like my daughter is six. And so I know at that point in time, we're not in the 80s. Like you can't leave the hospital without a car seat. Like we all know that, except if you live in New York City. But we all know that. And so go ahead. I'm just sitting here with my mouth open.
And then it was, you need to take CPR. So we start jumping through the hoops and we're getting the vibe. We're understanding the undertone. And then there's like, she needs to be able to finish a full bottle before she can go home. And she did. She chugged it. She's a champ. Yeah, she was right on the same page with us. So I had been discharged at this point. I needed to come back into the hospital and spend a night in the hospital to show them I knew what I was doing. So
that's nuts.
So I came back to the hospital and my husband could not come with me. I needed to do it by myself. So here I am. So many assumptions. So I came back, I packed a bag. I spent the night alone healing from a C-section with my newborn daughter. And so the next day the doctor needed to come by and give me the okay to take her home. We wait. She's supposed to come by 7 a.m. Then it was, she'll be here at 8. She didn't show up till late afternoon, 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. She just never showed up. And finally she shows up and she says, you're not going home today. First words out of her mouth. I'm like, wow, haven't seen you all day today. So by now we're...
Did I not pass the test?
Turns out I don't know how to take care of babies. So she says our daughter needs some experimental formula. It's really expensive. My husband stands right up and he pulls out his wallet and it's just like, how much is it? How much? Right. I'll pay for it. What do we need to do? And she backs down and says, okay, you can go home. So we run.
Pause. Did she not even explain why she was saying you couldn't go home?
It all came down to this very expensive formula that we would not be able to afford.
That you could not speak English to me and tell me the name of?
Yeah. And I'm like, I've been breastfeeding her. Why does she need to be on this formula all of a sudden? She was little. We had her at 35 weeks. She weighed 4 pounds. Mm-hmm. But everything was intact. Everything was fine. She was breathing. She didn't have any IVs or anything. So this whole situation, she gives us the okay, gets that low jack off, and we run. My C-section wound and everything.
I'm flying, and you're like, what's this?
He picked up that car seat because I couldn't lift it. He's walking faster than me, and I'm trying to keep up behind him. And I'm just telling him, go, I will make it. Get her out of here. Go. Comments about, could we afford this? Can we really take care of her? Yeah. Did she have to go to the doctor? And I'm just like, do you talk to all your patients like this? And I know you don't.
Right.
I think that it is important that we somehow find our voice and actually ask the question and confront, do you talk to all of your patients this way? Blah, blah, blah. Can I be more specific? Do you talk to only your Black patients this way? Because sometimes people try to pretend that they're really dense and that they don't get what you're trying to say. But I am very clear. And what I am trying to say here is that I feel as if you are racially profiling me and you are casting stereotypes onto me that I find very offensive.
Right. That's great. All of this, it all adds up.
So in the SMC spaces, we know that there are different flavors of sperm you can get. And by flavors, I mean, you can get anonymous or you can get open ID. And Seattle Sperm Bank has a reputation, a good reputation in our space. And primarily because most of your vials are open ID. And if I have that correct, can you explain to us a little bit about the reasoning for that and then your approach to the open ID or anonymous designations?
Yeah. So let me explain what open ID is, first of all. It means that our donors have contractually agreed to have some form of communication with any adult offspring in the future. Mm-hmm. So when we first started, we maybe had a couple of anonymous. There's just some people who prefer to have the anonymous donors. But in the end, in our program, you might find one still. So we really mean we're exclusively open ID. It's going to be hard to find an anonymous donor in our program. Mm-hmm. And so this means that we will help facilitate communication with any resulting offspring in a nice, safe space. Mm-hmm. From an FDA standpoint, they are anonymous because you don't know this person personally. And so that way we're not going to release any identifying information on this person. It's just for the adult offspring and it's up to them to initiate the contact. In the same strength, we're not going to release your information to this donor. It really feels like the right thing to do for families and for families with donor-conceived children, because there's mental health studies that show positive mental health outcomes for donor-conceived children. And it helps create that foundation of what made them, where they came from, and that sense of humanness within this kind of awkward space in this family building space. In the future, they could say, they could look at this donor and say, this is where I got that way I can move my eyebrow. This is the person. Additionally, there are things like Ancestry and 23andMe, and it just feels like a matter of time before everyone's open anyways. And we prep our donors for that. We tell them this is what it means to be a donor in our program. And so they're ready for that. So if their mom does that swab and it comes back with this link, it's not going to be a shock. Say, yeah, I did that. And these aren't your children. This is the result of your wonderful donation.
Right. I love that. I love that. So I have two follow-up questions. So when we say come of age and we say adult children, what age range are we talking about?
Teen.
Okay. All right. So can you take us through a little bit of what that contact might entail or what that might look like?
Yeah. So I'm excited to see how this looks too. So we haven't been around long enough to see it firsthand, but the adult offspring would come reach out to us. We keep up with all of our donors. They receive annual physicals with us. We would then facilitate the communication.
That's so awesome.
We will get to this when we talk later, because we want to talk about the impacts of COVID. When you talk about the donor making sure that they get a physical and things of that nature, this age of COVID with the vaccines, how might that work with a sperm bank?
Yeah. So before, the donors could casually come in and donate. Now it's a strict scheduling system to limit the number of donors who are in at one time and to make sure that they aren't waiting in the lobby at the same time, so that it's one person coming in and they're not running into anyone else. Everyone has masks on, everyone's social distancing. As far as the supply, definitely has been impacted. So last year, like a lot of other medical facilities, we had to shut down. And so we missed out on those donations. Our labs are located near schools. So as colleges have turned to virtual learning, donors have moved back home. So we've missed out on some donors who come in consistently who just don't live in the area anymore. So yeah, the supply has definitely gone down. And then on top of that, we normally go out and meet groups on campus to recruit new donors, and we can't meet anymore. So the supply has gone down because we don't have our new donors and we don't have our old donors.
I'm like, don't you have to abstain before you donate? And so now what does that do to the volume? Because people have been abstaining hopefully during for a year. So does that mean like we get, like, I am blushing. I'm blushing. Like, I've never said sperm so many in one day. I'm done.
Yes, sperm is my day. It's my life right now. No, so yeah, that conversation can be awkward, but we say that head on. We know this is awkward. And we try to make it a little lighter. We've got cool shirts that have our logo. Our logo includes a sperm graphic. We are awesome. Fraternities are super supportive about it. And what it really comes down to is, yes, you're donating sperm, and we know where sperm comes from, but it's a tissue donation. Right. It's donating blood. It's donating bone marrow. It's easier than doing those things, but it's a tissue donation at its heart, and it's helping a lot of families. So really try to stress that. And bring that home. That helps take away some of the taboo-ness in the conversation. They get a little shy, but once all the hoops they have to go through to get into our program, they start to become very dedicated to the cause. Yeah, we love no donors. We definitely love all the ways that families come together, especially being a sperm bank. So if you have someone special in your life, we fully support that. And if that special someone happens to be near one of our lab locations, we can help facilitate the whole known donor process. We want to make sure that although this is someone you know, we want them it to still be safe and a vial that's going to get you pregnant. So we'll do both infectious disease testing and we'll do a semen analysis, because you don't want to be going through these attempts and it's already an emotional journey to, you want to understand that this vial is going to work. And it may not be at the same level that we hold our donors to, but you should know the quality and efficacy that's going into this. If Jack doesn't have any sperm, you're not going to be able to see that with your eyes.
Elise, my donor in my head would be Jamal. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
The scenario. So I've got a special someone in my life, a friend or a donor that I met through a Facebook group. And I'm like, this is the one. And I go to your clinic and we settled the fees. They get the testing. How many vials do I get?
From this is your known donor. This is Jamal. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So we're going to try to get a lot of vials. We will see Jamal over a 2-week period and just batch it up for you. So that way, when you're going in for your attempts, you're not having to wait for when he gets off work to line up when you're ovulating. We want to have these ready to go to be shipped out to whether you're doing home insemination or you're doing a clinic insemination, whatever that looks like for you. We want to make sure that these vials are available. And we'll do a free year of storage. So you don't have to worry about those storage costs. Take your time. But I want to say it's around $2,000 for the whole thing. And that'll include the testing and all of the batching. Just have this all available for you. Yes, it's a little bit more expensive than using an anonymous donor, but we really want to do our due diligence the same that we do on the other donors.
So this is another question that we get often in our spaces, because there are choices of the different sperm banks that we could use. A lot of the moms really like Seattle Sperm Bank because of the family limits, right? Because they don't want to have the potential of having 200 donor siblings or potentially more running around with your children as they become of age, trying to look for their own partners. Seattle Sperm Bank has a particular reputation for having smaller family limits, which is ideal for some SMCs. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, our family limit is 25 families. Mm-hmm. And this is well below regulations. There's the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, and they have this guidance that says you should have 25 families for 800,000 people. And so we took that as 25 families for the entire US. And so we're well below these recommended guidelines. And we stick to that. And really, in reality, what that looks like is we see families starting to come into 11, 12, 13, we'll pull that donor and retire them and make them not available for any new families. But existing families could come back and use them for a sibling if they wanted that genetic match there. If you have concerns about having a donor who has a higher number of families, you can reach out to us. There's a portion of our donors who just don't stay in the program for very long because they joined at the end of college or they joined at the start of COVID and went home. We just have donors who aren't in the program as long as other ones. So let us know what your goals are and we'll try to help figure out what works for you. Yeah. If you happen to see any Black donors in San Diego, Seattle, or Phoenix, just send them over to us. Let Jamal know he is in high demand. No, but honestly, this the topic of diversity is something that's always at the top of all the conversations when it comes to donors. And it's not just looking for Black donors. It's all donors of color. We have so many different clients out there and they're trying to fulfill their family. And we just want to be able to give them those options. So we try our hardest to look for these donors. So we go out to school organizations and we try to approach them and their members and try to do some outreach there. But I know talking about it, we talked about this earlier, it's hard to talk about sperm donation. It's hard for schools to talk about sperm donation. Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. But yeah, we try to approach it that way. This is a donation that A, supports your dreams and goals because books and classes are expensive. And then B, it's helping a lot of families. You want to help the community. And it's not just white intended parents. It's intended parents of all colors. Mm-hmm. It's really helping your local community. And then our age range is 18 to 39. So it's not just students we're looking at. We try to look at young professionals. So sometimes it's a little easier to approach someone who's finished college and has a family of their own. And it makes the they understand what it means. You have a kid and somebody wants to share in this joy. But really, I think the whole industry struggles with this. It's not going to be fixed overnight. There's not like a simple solution. I know I definitely approach my husband a lot with this. Well, why didn't you donate when you were younger? Where are the donors?
And that's funny because since we've launched this podcast, I've been talking a lot about sperm everywhere I go. To all
you
my
get
friends,
real, like, real comfortable.
I'm coming for you, friend, guy friend, if I haven't had the sperm conversation with you. But I think the more that we have these conversations, these very real and very touching conversations about what it means to be a sperm donor, what it means to be a sperm donor's recipient or parent to a donor conceived child, I think that it opens up a whole world, because the woman who goes the sperm donor route is an actual person, and that there's a reason, and that she might not have ever had a baby without your donation. So to the sperm donors that are out there, thank you. To the men that are out there who this is something new for you, consider donating. Can you take us through what a donor might go through from start to finish?
Yeah. So it all starts with that semen analysis.
Your boys swim.
Yeah, we want to see. Can they swim? Can they swim consistently? And it's not just an average sample. It needs to be above average, because we know we're going to freeze this, and the freezing process kills about 50% of the sample. So we need to account for that on the front end. So they'll come in and they have like their great sample, and we're like, cool. You get to the next part where we're going to ask them a four-generation family history interview, where we ask about grandparents and siblings and aunts and uncles and your parents and your children, if they happen to have children. Yeah. And we ask, what have family members passed from your grandparents? What did they pass from, if they've passed? Or you have any family members who passed in infancy? And we try to look for trends. We ask them about cancer, and we ask them about, we get very deep on this. And a lot of times they have to go back to their own family and ask these questions. Mm-hmm. And then we have a genetic counselor on staff who kind of combs through all that and looks for patterns and trends to see if there's a high risk for conditions being passed on to any future offspring. Uh-huh. Then they get through that. We start verifying their records. And we, if they're, I'm in med school, we want to see the transcripts. And if they say they're a doctor, we want to see the degree. We want to see your license. We want the receipts. We do a full criminal background check. Uh-huh. And we fingerprint them. The fingerprinting part is cool, because then we use that as part of the check-in process. So when guys come in to donate, they give a fingerprint. Like, exactly. There's no question here. We know who's going to that cup. Uh-huh. Then they also have to come in and visit our medical director. They get a full physical. We want to make sure they're healthy. They do a metabolic panel. They do a urinalysis. We check for STIs. We do a genetic screening of 175 conditions. It's a lot. And then ongoing, kind of in the background, is because we get to interact with them so often, we get an idea who this person is. And we want them to have a good personality. We want them to be able to represent our company well. And it's cool. It's our client services team who has a lot of these interactions. So it's a really huge plus when you go to have your consult with somebody on our team and they actually know the donor that you're looking at. Yeah. So you're saying, I want him to have a cleft chin, or I want him to have a strong jawline. I want him to be funny. We can answer this because we know him. After all of these hoops, it's only one in every 1,000 applicants that actually makes it in the program. Yeah. So I feel like it's become pretty normal to talk about like porn subscriptions. I know it's a hot topic. That's to make awesome. Sure we're covering the right, we have the right access and have the right amount of material available. And, it is a variety. So we'll have a subscription to a site, and then it's, do we get the premium account or do we get the extra premium account to make sure that it's maintained? Because you don't want someone to go in and then have to awkwardly come tell someone.
Do we have any new material?
Yes. Yeah, I think you get over it fast. We're all really, we talk about ejaculation and the porn, and then we have to talk about home insemination and the correct placement of
where you're inseminating. Awesome.
We try to be very transparent. All of our prices are online, but I'll break it down right now. So you want the all access pass so you can actually see the donors and make your decision. And that's $50 for 3 months. And that'll be everything we have. There's no other tier. There's no other access you need. That'll just give you the entire profile. If you just wanted to look for donors and just look at their genetics to start with, you could really look at what we have in our database before you purchase this. So if you're a carrier of something, you can go in and filter that out and just decide if that's worth it. But yeah, $50 and that's it. And so we have baby photos, the audio interviews, the full family history, and then you're going to need to buy your vial. So we have a couple of different vial options, but the one that most people purchase for any kind of treatment is the IUI vial, and that's $850 each. Mm-hmm. So in that vial, you're getting all of the testing that we've done on this donor, both genetic and infectious. You're getting a high quality sample that's been verified with specific modal counts. Our guarantee is 10 million modal per milliliter, although we really do exceed that often. We get great feedback from labs. But I want to highlight that what our modal counts are is progressively modal. It's not just something that's moving. It's something that's progressively going somewhere. And an egg is what we're hoping. It's not swimming in a circle. It's not following
the GPS. Sperm has a GPS.
US has more sperm. Yes.
We put the low jack on the sperm and then where are you going? We do great counts, awesome. Meaningful counts. You're also getting the fact that we've vouched for who this individual is. They've gone through background checks, record verification, and we weigh their personality into it. You're getting the legality behind it. Our donors have signed away their rights and responsibilities to all resulting offspring. It's just you. And then, of course, you're either going to ship it or store it. So if you ship it, most of the shipping is $180 with an extra $100 for overnight. I want to caution against overnight. It's just not as reliable, but it's $180 and that's 2-day shipping. So pretty mm-hmm. quick. And all of our vials come with some sort of free storage. If you get 2 vials, you get 6 months of storage for free. And then if you wanted to add more, another 6 months, it's $200. You get a full year for $350. And that's even lower priced if you're successful and you had some leftover vials. We will discount that storage because we know you give birth, you're not trying to give birth tomorrow. So we do that discounted. And then if you were like, I'm done giving birth and you stored some vials with us still at our site, we'll buy them back at 50% of the cost. Nice. I don't interact with intended parents firsthand for the most part. I think that a personal experience I had, and it didn't feel extra, but I felt like it was just amazing. Like the stars lined up. I was visiting, so I visit clinics. And I was visiting a clinic and a woman, as I was talking with the clinic for my meeting with them, overheard that I was from a sperm bank and she grabbed me and she said, can we talk? I live in California. So I'm in a clinic in California and she's just like, Seattle Sperm Bank, can you deliver here? What do you have? And she's a Black woman. So she's, do you have Black donors? You? And so it was great having
on you now.
It was like great.
You for the one Black donor.
Like, wait a minute.
I heard you have Jamal.
Yes, I heard about Jamal. It was this wonderful podcast I was listening to. Awesome. No, I feel like all the intended parent interactions, we understand the emotions. I'm going through IVF. We have other team members who've done egg freezing. We have adoption. We have LGBTQ community members. I think we really connect with everyone and understand how emotionally and financially and how sensitive all of this is and how intense it is. So really anybody reaching out to us, we've heard it and we understand it.
Well, Pod, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. If you like what you heard, please share this podcast with your girlfriends. And I'd love to hear your thoughts about the topics covered in this episode. So email me at mochasmc@gmail.com. And if you found value in the topics covered, consider making a donation using the link in the show notes below. Till next time, Pod. Bye now.